Hi there. Thanks for checking out Telich Talks. If this is the first time that you've popped along and hopped onto my podcast, allow me to introduce myself. My name is John Telich. I am a retired sportscaster here in Cleveland, Ohio. I did TV sports for 42 years at the same television station. It's Fox 8 TV in Cleveland. And I did that for all those years in a variety of capacities, main anchor guy, weekend sports guy, producer, obviously out there every day reporting on sports at the various venues. So had some great experiences covering so many different things on the Cleveland sports landscape over the years. But this podcast is not entirely about Cleveland sports, and sometimes some of the episodes have very little to do with sports. Today may be one of those cases. Greg Lockhart was a former videographer, a video journalist, if you will, at Channel 8, one of my old colleagues. I worked many years with Greg, respected him highly. And Greg, though, in recent times, was named the chairman of the Cleveland chapter of the 100 Black Men organization. What is that? And why did he take the job? Why is he putting back so much into his community? We'll get some of those answers from Greg about that very shortly. But first, hit that subscribe button, like, follow, any kind of review that you can leave on Spotify or on Apple Podcast. I certainly would appreciate so very, very much. My chat with Greg Lockhart, it's right now, right here on Telich Talks. So pleased to have Greg Lockhart on the podcast with me. We go back a long way, Lock. I can't remember how many years we worked together at Fox 8, but it always was a pleasure working with you. When did you actually get into photojournalism per se?
So I graduated from Kent State in 1981.
Okay.
I started at I actually started at Channel 5, like a lot of our colleagues did. I was there for a very brief time, about 3 years, and then I migrated over to Channel 3 and was there for 9 years. And I came over to Fox 8 when they switched to Fox, which was in 94. So okay. I was there from 94, and I retired in 2000. So I was there, what's that, 36 years, something like that?
Long time. Great career for you. And boy, didn't the business change? Tell our listeners in some ways how photojournalism, as you knew it early in your career, morphed into what it was like when you were kind of getting out of the business.
Well, when I started, it was just on the tail end of film. So I missed the film days, but I'll probably get the order wrong, but I was through so many iterations of how we captured the news. So it was... one inch, it was the recorder. We first started off with the two-team crew. So you had a camera guy, you had a sound guy, one inch, beta, VHS. We had M2 at one time. There were so many different formats, beta SP, all these different formats. But the goal obviously was every time for it to be better quality, and it was. All the way up to the digital age. And so there were five or six different iterations of how we captured tape. And then obviously, in terms of just the side of the business where the content wise, we went from, a couple of hours broadcasting a day to almost broadcasting all day, 3 o'clock, a 4 o'clock, a 6 o'clock, a 7 o'clock, a 8 o'clock, a 10 o'clock, 4 hours or 5 hours in the morning. It just became overwhelming. And so the workloads got heavier and heavier, and responsibility got more and more. But I enjoyed it, and I'm sure you did too. But it was a challenge. It really was.
It really was. But it was such a privilege. I always felt, Greg, because I was kind of getting a chance to be
not necessarily front row, but obviously be at all the big events. And in Cleveland in sports, a lot of the big events were bummer events, actually.
Yeah,
you know, the
yeah.
signature, the drive and the fumble, and of course the Brian Sipe interception and Jose Mesa's meltdown and all this stuff. But it really was a privilege to be able to be there at the forefront of that and enjoy it. And like you, so many different iterations. I actually did begin in film in a few markets before I got to Cleveland. I'm a bit older than you and guys like Mr. Cellini and what have you. Now, you're a Cathedral Latin graduate, and you were a very good athlete, very good football player. What was it like playing for the Lions back in the day at that big, magnificent school down there in University Circle area?
It was great. I came from East Cleveland. I was an East Cleveland Chief, and, you know, some of us migrated up the hill, if you will, and played at Cathedral Latin. And, you know, Vince and I played together there. Vince was a tight end, a very good football player. And it was great playing. It was a Crown Conference back then. They were still doing city championships. We got an opportunity to play at the old Municipal Stadium. You know, and so, you know, those Crown Conference battles with St. Ed's, Padua, Joe's, Ignatius was a part of that at the time. So you were playing the best competition. You know, it groomed you and it honed your skills. We used to run up the hill there. We were located at 107th and between Euclid and Chester. We'd run up the hill, Fair Hill, and go through a fence. And the water, Baldwin Water Plant is there now. Crawl through a fence, go through the brush and whatever. And when we get to the top of the hill, that was our practice field. And when we were done, we'd come back down, come back through the fence, and then we'd come back down the hill. And all the traffic going up Fair Hill would blow at us and whatever. But it was quite an experience and something I'll never forget.
And so you go from Cathedral Latin, and you mentioned Kent State. Was all college at Kent State? Was elsewhere as well or no?
No. Kent State was the one and only, and I was there. And, you know, I went there for, back in the day, they called it telecommunications.
Yeah.
And minored in journalism. And, you know, from day one, it's what I knew I wanted to do. I actually, you know, sometimes you do take twists and turns in your careers. And when I was at Kent, I was doing the weather and doing sports. yeah, how about that? And so I remember some of our senior projects. Another colleague of ours, and he's still working, Richard Scott, Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom.
He was in my classroom along with Ben Hobart and others, but a lot of names that you'll recognize. But we worked on each other's senior project, and I think I still have a copy of my recorded senior project that we did. But I got an opportunity to get an internship while I was still working at Channel 5 behind the scenes as an editor. I was editing for Gib Shanley, and that turned into employment, and you know, the rest is history, as they say.
Was Wayne Dawson there maybe a couple years ahead of you?
Wayne, yeah. Wayne had just left as I was coming. And so he was a couple years ahead of me. Well, four, I guess. But yeah, I met Wayne and, you know, knew him from East Cleveland, obviously. And actually, the very first video project that I did that included professionals, myself and another gentleman, we were hired to produce an orientation tape for Kent State for incoming freshmen to view for orientation. And guess who we hired? Wayne and Herb Thomas.
No, Herb. Oh, but God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him. So that was my first introduction to them. And, you know, they were great at what they did. And Wayne still is.
Wayne still is. He just signed a contract last year for another long way. And I've had him on the podcast previously. And we go back a long way and have such great fond memories working with each other. Same for Herb. Herb, God bless him. He was the best. He was just a wonderful human being. And what a professional. I remember Wayne also telling me on the pod that he actually wanted to be a sports writer. I mean, he got, when he was at college, he thought he would become a sports writer. It's turned out that he's become an immensely credible and popular news anchor man and Pastor Wayne. He's had quite the remarkable career.
Yeah, he has. He's come a long way. And, you know, it's very rare to in this business to work at one place your entire career. And I think, he came in as a reporter trainee.
Yep.
He got that opportunity, he ran with it, and he's done very, very, very well. So we're all proud of him.
Yeah, how proud of him, proud of everybody. It was just a wonderful atmosphere to work at Channel 8 with so many folks such as yourself that made working there so much of a delight day in and day out. And in recent months, you have received some good news that's been well-earned. You were named the chairman of the 100 Black Men of Greater Cleveland organization. Tell our listeners how old this organization is and what its impetus is.
Well, the 100 Black Men of Greater Cleveland is an affiliate of the 100 Black Men of America, which, that was an organization that was started by, Mayor Dinkins and other dignitaries and in New York City. And so in Cleveland, our chapter started in 1997. And some of the founders were Judge Mike Nelson, Judge Adrian, some names that you probably are familiar with as well. And so what we're all about is, we're about trying to enhance the quality of life for African Americans in our community, and particularly for young Black boys. We are first and foremost a mentoring organization, so we want to make sure that we import positive mentoring situations into the lives of these kids. As you know, a lot of them do not have father figures, or they come from single parent homes and what have you. So we try to fill that gap as men in their lives, giving them encouragement, a positive direction and role models. So one of our saying is what they see is what they'll be. So we try to make sure that we, serve as a positive role model and that we give them something to look up to and to emulate.
Do you have job fairs or anything of that nature, Greg, or is it mostly pairing one gentleman with a youngster, or how does that work?
So there's a variety of ways that we mentor. So we do have one-on-one mentoring that you just spoke of, and that's one mentee to one mentor. And there is a curriculum that we follow. There's a set of guidelines that we go by. It's called Mentoring the 100 Way. So that there's a consistent approach to how we affect these young men. We also do group mentoring, and all of it is done through our four pillars. So we concentrate on economic empowerment, education, health and wellness, and mentoring is the last one. So through those four pillars and our programming, we have programming in each one of those pillars. We try to provide those services that I mentioned. So some of our programs include, a Saturday Academy, where all of the four pillars are involved in that. So we have some financial literacy, where we're trying to teach kids about the value of a dollar, how to save and invest, how, just basic things about credit, how to balance a checkbook, things that they're not taught in school that they really need to know, just living out here in the world. Life skills, how to treat one another, conflict resolution, violence prevention, those things that you hear about when kids get in trouble. If they had some type of way to, resolve those conflicts through mediation and we used to, when we were growing up, you throw a blow, I throw a blow, it'd be over, Now today, they take it to this level where people really get hurt. So we want to try and teach them how to, temper their themselves and how to act in a one-on-one conversation. So there's a lot of things that they need, and so we try to provide as much as we can.
How was your upbringing in the city of Cleveland years and years ago?
So I was raised in East Cleveland, and it was a great, people hear East Cleveland and they want to, immediately think of negative thoughts, but when I was growing up there, East Cleveland was a wonderful place to live. Our family lived on a street and in a community where they say it takes a village. So if you walk down the street, the neighbor could say something to you, the mom or the dad, everybody knew everybody, you respected everyone. And so my dad was the president of the street club, you know,
okay,
so,
cool.
So I got, you know, to see, you know, leadership roles. I got to see, you know, working together in the community, and I got to see how everyone with opportunity could thrive. So it was a great upbringing. I, like, as I mentioned earlier, I played for the Little League baseball, with football, and you know, it was just a camaraderie that is difficult to duplicate today.
It is kind of difficult to duplicate because there's a lot of hurdles in the way. One of them I would venture to say might be social media. How kids, that's almost, they're not, I'm not going to be too dramatic, say they're Lord and Savior, but I mean, an influence upon them that they maybe pay too much attention to. Do you find that to be the case when you're dealing with young people that, like, put that phone down, I want to talk to you, you know, one-on-one, if you will?
Absolutely. It's an issue. But I think, you know, sometimes you have to, what I've learned is you have to meet kids where they are. So, you know, as it relates to the phone and social media, what we try to do is have a presence on there ourselves. And then that way, you know, we can engage them at that level. But you're right. There is a time to put it away. There is a time to use it as a learning device, you know, because a lot of times there's a lot of good things out on social media,
sure,
and the internet. So if you're steering them in the right direction, or if you're using it as a support mechanism for your program or whatever, then you can use it to your advantage. But yeah, if it goes unsupervised and unvetted, it's like anything else, it can become a problem.
Can you take me back to an instance or two, Greg, that since you've been involved in the organization, of someone who, of a young person who really was affected well by either yourself or someone that you knew, or and in a success story in that sense that we can, more and more of our listeners can see the fruits of this mentoring type of program?
Yeah, and a lot of times it's not the real dramatic change, but sometimes it's sure, the small changes that lead to dramatic changes in their lives. And so I'll just give an example of attendance. You know, a lot of times my wife's an educator, and so I hear about one of the problems is just for kids coming to school.
Gotcha.
So we track, we do a phone bank. We make sure that the parents know if a kid didn't come to school, that they didn't come. And so now there's, because a lot of times they don't know, parents at work, they may not get the call. So we just try to make them aware of what's going on. And then we try to hold the kids responsible. You know, we have a creed that they have to learn, and it talks about being persistent and consistent and having integrity and, you know, just trying to teach them about character and just some of those basic things that I said that, you know, that you and I got in the home that some of them may not get. So, you know, we try to teach them about that. And then we give them examples of how this is where you broke that rule, or this is where you were in compliance. So, you know, attendance is one. Mental health is another area where now we're seeing issues with kids. So, we try to provide the resources or steer them in the areas where the resources are. And just taking kids and exposing them to things that they haven't been exposed to. I'll give you this the last example. Last year, we went to our annual conference, and it was in Las Vegas. And we were able to take seven kids. We were able to raise enough dollars to take seven kids where all expenses were paid, airfare, meals, hotel, registration. And at this conference, they were able to see from all over the country a number of young people and people my age, professionals, Black men, and in a situation where everything was positive, everything was geared toward them, everything was an environment where they could learn and see, again, that what they see is what they'll be motto. And they participated in a competition called Dollars and Cents, which is one of the financial pillars I was telling you about. So they had to prepare all year for that. Then when they got to the national, they didn't place, but just having that experience of competing at that level and preparing to do that, and then seeing those, what it took for those that did win, was an experience that they'll never forget. So we were ecstatic that we were able to take that many kids, and this year our plan is to take even more.
That's awesome that you'll be able to do that and have, and boy, what an eye opener, no? For someone that gets to go to Vegas and do this.
I mean, some of these kids, believe it or not, they've never seen Lake Erie. You know, their 2 mile radius, they don't even go beyond. So when you get an opportunity to take them on exposure field trips, I mean, just, you know, we've gone to the museums. A lot of them have never been to the art museum or the history museum. It's incredible. So, I mean, you start in your own backyard, but we were able to branch out and do that. And so, yeah, it's an eye opener, and it's something that, you know, speaks to life skills. And, you know, you can't, it's very difficult to ask someone to imagine to do or be something if they have had an opportunity to see it. So you want to expose them to as much as you can.
And so what drew you to the organization in the first place? You've obviously been involved with it for years, Greg, and now being the chairman here in Cleveland. Was there one particular instance that led you down the path towards connecting with the folks? Was it something while you're on the job?
Actually, I'll tell you what the nail in the coffin was, so to speak. It was actually the experiences that I was getting while I was working. Because as much as, you know, we do the things that we love to do, we talk about, you know, being, I was there at Jose Mesa when two strikes, two outs in Florida Marlins. And I was at when the Cavs got swept in San Antonio. You and I have been on many trips.
Yep.
Tony Rizzo and I have talked about it. But the day-to-day stories that people don't hear about kind of stuck with me. And a lot of the stories that I shot and covered dealt with young African-American males getting in trouble with the legal system or having some type of impediment or barrier that they couldn't overcome. And so that's really what hit home with me. And I said, well, I'm covering it. I'm you know, almost kind of contributing to it. What can I do to help or do something about it? So I wanted to actually take a look at the other side and see, you know, is there something that I can do about it to help as opposed to just promote it?
We have so many great individuals in the city that can serve as incredibly great role models for youth. And none that I can think of as well as Ted Ginn Sr., who we both have known for years. And, you know, what he does with the Ginn Academy, what he again, I can recall talking to him just like I'm speaking with you now, Greg, about I have kids here who have never, like you mentioned, never even seen Lake Erie. And so the sphere of influence for them is concentrated, and it's on such a negative level in the confines of this 1 mile radius, 2 mile, 3 mile radius, wherever. And to break out of that can be incremental, or it can be one big dramatic thing, such as going to Las Vegas. And it seems to me you guys are making a great impact both on the incremental level and then on a big, eyes wide open kind of level as well.
Yeah, I think you have to kind of look at it, you know, in a broad sense and, you know, apply it where it needs to be applied. For example, when you talk about who in terms of age group or demographic we try to impact, you know, we have a tutoring program at Way Park Elementary where we're just focusing on reading because we know that the literacy skills are below where they need to be. So that's the focus there. But we also have programs that target high school kids. We have what's called the Collegiate 100, where we're in at Cleveland State, Case, and Tri-C. And those are programs for that age group of kids. To impact them, there's something called the Emerging 100, where you're trying to get and introduce kids to the concept of becoming an entrepreneur. And, you know, I think it's important to collaborate and to partner with other organizations and like-minded individuals that because a lot of there's, like you said before, there's a lot of organizations out here trying to do the same thing. So I think that concept of strength in numbers comes into play. And so, you know, I was at an NAACP meeting last night and they're talking about some of the same things they're talking about, the Urban League. We're talking to College Now and, you know, others. And so, you know, when you get together and you're able to work together, I think the impact sometimes is much more impactful. Sometimes the funding is, you know, you're able to get more funding. So so we're taking a look at that. And that's one of the priorities that I want to have in my administration.
You mentioned before social media, how you guys have like a little bit of a footprint on it. Please tell our listeners how they might find that kind of imprint via social media in any one of the apps.
Okay, so yeah, we're at our website is www.100blackmencle.org. Okay. That's our website, and you can find us on Instagram and Twitter and all the other common social media just by Googling us and finding us that way.
Well, great work and fantastic catching up with you, my friend. All the best to you as the chairman of this incredible organization, the best to you and your family, and hope to see you making a tour of local golf courses in a very expeditious manner, as opposed to taking a long time and too many shots.
Well, you know what? That's something that's never going to change. We talk about retirement and sitting on the couch and getting fat and all that stuff. That doesn't apply to me, and I know it doesn't apply to you. I'm busier now than I have ever been, but I am making sure that I try to enjoy each and every day, try to take care of my health. I'm going on a golf trip next week with some guys. We're going to go to Orlando. So
nice.
Yeah, we got to fit that in always.
Well, I'll tell you something, Greg. Yeah, retirement has been fantastic. And one of my real big joys of what I did for a living was connecting with good people, and you are good people. And I was very blessed to work with someone such as your character and your nature for many years, and always cherished the times that we had a chance to cross paths and work. And people have to know we don't work together each day. There might be a couple of weeks go by and I'm not working with you, and I'm working with someone 4 days in a row. It just, that's the luck of the draw. But it was always a pleasure to work with you. And then knowing that we're, you know, as retired guys, we're trying to live our lives with a purpose. And I think that's really important. And you certainly are doing it, my friend.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. And I feel the same way. I've always enjoyed working with you. I knew that the experience was going to be fun, and it was not going to be dramatic. We were just going to do what we had to do and get it done. And I've always admired your tenacity and your approach to how you do your health and your marathons and push yourself and get the most you can out of your body. I think that's incredible, and I think it's incredibly encouraging. So keep it up. I wish you good health. And it's always a joy to see and talk to you.
As well, you. Ladies and gentlemen, the chairman of the Cleveland version of the 100 Black Men organization, Mr. Gregory Lockhart. Thanks, Lock. Great chatting with you. All the best, and have a great day.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks so much to Greg for the great conversation. I always enjoyed the times that I would go out on stories with Greg, one of the many outstanding journalists that we had that had that camera on their shoulders or on the tripod, going around to a variety of events. Of course, the photographers at our shop would go to sporting events. They would do hard news. Sometimes they would be involved in investigative stakeout situations. They would go into tough neighborhoods to get all of the issues related to a story. And Greg was one of those individuals who did it with aplomb and with just a tremendous attitude each and every day. Always enjoyed my time working with Greg Lockhart. And all the best to you, Greg, as you move along the path with that tremendous organization that you are giving so much of your time for in your quote-unquote retirement as well. Have a great day, gang. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And as usual, we look forward to another chat with someone else on next week's edition of Tellage Talks. We'll see you then.